And before we begin, I would like to ask any veterans that we have in the audience to please stand so that we can honor you for your service.
You're here.
Or raise your hand. Okay, I'm going to move out of order slightly because it's requested that we start with House Bill 2932. Mr. Stanbridge, would you like to read
so you can
the
open a hearing and
oh, I'd like to open a hearing on
this is your chance to use
House Bill 2932.
Madam Vice Chair, this is House Bill 2932. It requires locally provided public transportation to be free for veterans.
This morning we have three people who have signed up to testify, beginning with Roger Martin from the Oregon Transit Association.
Madam Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Roger Martin. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Transit Association, and I'm here in opposition. I'm dead set against House Bill 2932 as written. I want to point out to you that I am a veteran. I appreciated you recognizing all the veterans in the room. Almost everyone in my generation is a veteran because we were there in the days of the draft and we either signed up or we got drafted. I served. I served honorably in an era when there was nothing at risk for this country. All of my friends that were in the service with me fought what we used to laugh about, the Great Battle of the Liberty Pass, because it was peacetime. I know what this bill is intended to do, but I want to point out to you that those friends of mine who served at the same time, we should find a way to get them out of their BMWs, their Cadillacs, their Audis, their other nice cars, but giving them free pass on the local bus system is not the way to do it. You intend for this bill to be directed towards those veterans that really need bus service. In the metropolitan area of Portland, there are somewhere between 135,000 and 150,000 veterans. Almost half of them are in my generation, which qualifies them for senior pass right now, a discounted pass. Unfortunately, not very many of them avail themselves. I do on occasion. I pay full fare. I don't use the senior pass because I'm still in denial. But we do have in the metropolitan area probably somewhere in the range of 1,200 to 1,500 disabled veterans. They qualify currently for a discounted pass. You will hear, I hope, from Tamara Blackman from the Department of Employment. She's been in touch with TriMet. We're talking seriously, as are the other transit agencies, about a program that would look to assist those veterans who are looking for employment, disadvantaged in any way, and make those passes available to them. The real message in this is the bill is wide open. Please restrain it in some way, either in this piece of legislation or in some other way, and we will very happily, readily, and in total cooperation work with you, with the Employment Division, anybody else, to provide those passes to those people that really need them. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. Are there any questions of the committee for Mr. Martin? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Martin, it sounded like you just said, and I want to make sure that I understand, that TriMet is considering some kind of a free or very, very significantly reduced pass program for disabled vets and or those looking for work. Did I understand you correctly?
Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, correct. TriMet is working currently with the Department of Employment to identify those veterans who are returning, who need employment, who would profit by or, you know, need to have such a pass and supply that.
And if I may follow up, are there transit agencies doing similar things? I guess I'm asking the question. Maybe I'm wondering whether this bill is even necessary to help those people if the transit authorities are going to do this on their own.
Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, I won't argue with you whether the bill is necessary or not. I think it in some amended form, it would be all right. But the action you're desiring is going to happen whether or not the bill passes.
Thank you.
Representative Boquist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm going to speak more some comments later. Roger, comment back. I think what's transpiring is that the, many of the transit authorities, employment department, is going to speak, so on and so forth. But we've now identified the crux of the issue, which is we have unemployed veterans or those maybe needing medical assistance that need some help in getting transit in the cities. And I think what Roger's organization, and I know what TriMet and others are saying, is you know, we're willing to step up the table, work together with the employment department and maybe some county veteran service peoples to identify those small amount of needy groups and come up with their own plan to help them. And I think that's, you know, it speaks a lot to Roger's organization and other organizations that are saying, hey, we, you know, this is brought to us now. We're going to try and come up with a solution. And then they can come back to us a letter time and say, well, here's our solution to this. And this bill may or may not be needed. Or even as Roger said, maybe we amend it or something a later time. But I think that they're doing the honorable thing and doing what's right, and we should give them some time to do that. Is it, am I saying the right thing, Roger?
Madam Chair, I couldn't agree more with a representative from Dallas and the true veteran among this group.
Madam Chair, Representative Boquist made my point much better than I did.
We choreographed that.
Are there any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, I'd like to call Kevin O'Reilly. Good morning.
Good morning. Chair Farr, members of the committee, my name is Kevin O'Reilly. I'm here representing the Oregon Paralyzed Veterans of America, and I would like to speak to House Bill 2932. As an organization, we feel this bill is pretty much unnecessary. There are obviously other programs coming up and other programs in existence to help disabled and veterans looking for work. We wouldn't be opposed to, as mentioned, seeing some form of pass given to veterans who are looking for work, which are those veterans who are currently working and members of their communities, probably make enough money to buy a bus pass. And if there's any questions, I'll be more than happy to answer. Pretty quick and easy today.
Thank you. Are there any questions of the committee for Mr. O'Reilly? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Nice letter.
Next, I would like to call Mr. H.A. McDonald.
For the record, my name is Matt McDonald, representing Oregon Veterans. And we look at all bills, what's good for veterans, what's good for Oregon. On this particular bill, we think it would be an administrative nightmare to issue bus passes or passes for public transportation to all veterans. And we don't think the state of Oregon or the TriMet and the various public transportation organizations could afford it. Therefore, we're against this bill. We see no need for it, especially if TriMet and the other organizations will help either disabled veterans and veterans looking for work of that nature. And we request that you vote no.
Thank you, Mr. McDonald. Are there any questions? Is there anyone else who would like to speak to this bill? And I would like to close the hearing on House Bill 2932. Let's go in order. Okay. I would like to open a public hearing on House Bill 2852. Okay.
Madam Chair, House Bill 2852 establishes the Veterans Family Caregiver Program to provide income to family members who provide in-home care to disabled veterans. It appropriates a blank amount of general fund to the program. This has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
I would like to call Jim Willis to testify to this bill.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jim Willis. I'm director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. House Bill 2852 has a noble intent. Having said that, I believe that the services that it is intended to provide are available through state government today. I believe that the function, as described here, is best provided through the Department of Human Services. They are also the state agency that oversees current in-home care for disabled persons. We are not trained to do that kind of work, and again, this may have a very noble purpose, it is not something that we believe should be assigned to the Department of Veterans Affairs, and I would respectfully request that amendments to this bill assigning it to the appropriate state agency be considered. I'd be happy to answer any questions, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Willis. Does the committee have any questions for Mr. Willis? Yes. Representative Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Willis, you said that this should be put at DHS. You also said, if I heard you correctly prior to that, you said that it was already being provided by DHS. Did I hear you say that?
They do the oversight of in-home care now.
Okay.
They're assigned to do that by statute. So that's not something that should be duplicated by my agency, nor are we trained to do that kind of work.
May I follow up, Madam Chair? I think that's a yes. Do you know if DHS is currently now, though, doing anything specifically on behalf of in-house, in-home care providers for veterans? Is there any state program, to your knowledge, included in it?
Yes, Chair Farr and Representative Bruin, I don't believe there's one specifically for veterans. Okay. There certainly is one specifically for disabled persons.
Okay.
And I can't imagine that would exclude veterans. So without having read the statute on that, I can't directly respond that it says veteran. I don't believe it does.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Willis. Does anyone else have a question? Thank you for your testimony.
Okay.
County Veteran Service Officer.
Next, I'd like to call Kevin O'Reilly with the Oregon Paralyzed Veterans.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kevin O'Reilly. I'm representing the Oregon Paralyzed Veterans of America, and we pretty much support this bill. Many of our members are low income, and their family members do provide care for them in home. And it is financial hardship on those families. Usually the family member who's providing the care has had to quit work, and this could help them immensely.
Thank you.
We think a greater need for these funds might be in respite care. A family member who is taking care of a loved one at home is often, it's a full-time job, and it's emotionally wearing on them. And occasionally a break is necessary, even though I'm sure many people do it without any thought to that. Some form of having a break is very helpful. We'd like to mention that there is federally a bill coming up called, it's actually been dropped already, it's called the House Resolution 1262, the Ronald Reagan Alzheimer's Breakthrough Act of 2005.
portion of that bill contains the Lifespan Respite Care Act, and this would provide money for a respite program for unpaid caregivers. The money would be given to state and local levels. It would pay for training and recruitment of workers and volunteers and direct respite services. We think something along these lines is even more important for family members who are taking care of a loved one at home. And if there's any questions, I'll be my best to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. O'Reilly. Representative Boakless?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Kevin, are you thinking that if the federal legislation passes, that's going to address this problem, and then that DHS here in the state would automatically be able to implement that program, or would there be additional implementation language that would need to be done similar to this bill?
We would hope that if this federal legislation passes, it would take care of the problem. It would benefit all citizens, not just veterans. Whether or not it passes is another question.
Follow-up, Madam Chair.
Follow-up.
Second question. I mean, fully understand, you know, waiting for the federal government's always like kind of like owning sex. Anticipation, right?
Yeah.
And there are some other programs that we know address this issue. Could you touch, you know, to keep reminding committee members, I mean, some programs exist out there, and the avenue everybody points through is County Veteran Service Officers as that avenue. Are you aware of some of the programs, I think, that Mr. Willis mentioned that, you know, if people knew about, would address a small percentage of this program? And are you still of the opinion that County Veteran Service Officers are one avenue to get people assistance that may already exist?
I know that Department of Human Services does provide some funding for in-home care. I don't know how it works. I'll assume that they don't necessarily pay a family member, but they would pay for an outside. I know that they do a hiring for caregivers. And again, I don't know how it works. They have the Oregon Project Independence. And this is, my understanding is it's primarily for elderly citizens to continue to be able to live at home. I don't know if it helps disabled people or how much it would help. And I don't know how it reflects on veterans.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Are there any other questions for Mr. O'Reilly? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Jacqueline Zimmer, would you like to testify?
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Jacqueline Zimmer with the Oregon Association of Area Agencies on Aging and Disabilities. And I just wanted to maybe help clear up a few things from the previous speaker's remarks because we actually deliver the services to people who are seniors and people with physical disabilities. And so some of the things they're referring to, we are actually the agencies that determine eligibility and help connect people to services. Either through the County Veteran Services Officers or through an Area Agency on Aging office. So the program that you're recommending today in 2852 actually does exist in the Department of Human Services budget. It's called the Relative Foster Care Program. And that program right now serves, I think we're at around 1,800 to maybe close to 2,000 individuals. That the price tag for that is about $22 million. That was slated for complete elimination under the governor's recommended budget. In the co-chair's budget, the House fully funded it, and the Senate funded it at about $16 million, if I remember correctly. But the gist of that is that if you do have a relative who is impaired or frail, generally somebody who is essentially nursing home material, I guess we would say, the families can receive a small stipend for taking care of that family member. It averages about $838 per month. And what we do know is that the majority of the individuals that are receiving relative foster care treatment will, in fact, end up either in a nursing home or receiving care from strangers 24/7. This is pretty much a 24/7 situation. And so the veterans in Oregon who need assistance can through our system, I believe they can apply for relative foster care, the relative foster care program. But it is a limited amount of funds. So, but it is an option for them. And I'm not sure how many veterans might be using that program, but I assume that there are some on that particular program. So a similar program does exist that you could model this after, and I would assume that you would administer it through the Department of Human Services since they are the ones that have the determination criteria there. There's another program in place called the Family Caregiver Support Act. It's a federal program, but it's also operated through the state and Area Agency on Aging offices, and we do help try to provide support and respite to family caregivers, because we do know that 79% of the care is provided by family members, and they do suffer tremendous burnout. And if you're taking care of someone year upon year, you can actually wear out a lot of folks around you. And I don't mean that in an unkind way, but it takes a lot of support. And so the Family Caregiver Support Act was created to help fill in for some of the needs there. So you can also get information about that from our offices. And then finally, Kevin referred to the Oregon Project Independence Program, which he is correct. It's a program primarily for seniors and people with Alzheimer's, but we are trying to expand that this year to include people with physical disabilities. And that's the Oregon Project Independence Modernization Act of 2005, which the speaker has in her office, but is also Senate Bill 870 on the Senate side. And one of the things that we recognize is that Oregon Project Independence is 30 years old. It was created before we have this Medicaid waiver that we have right now. And our offices, for the most part, do serve side by side seniors and people with physical disabilities. And so when both populations lost services in the last couple of bienniums, Medicaid services, a senior could turn to Oregon Project Independence, but a person with physical disabilities could not. And so that's why we wanted to open it up to people with physical disabilities. So that's, if there's a veteran there who is over 60, they can actually come into our offices and inquire about OPI. And if we're successful at passing Senate Bill 870, then the younger ones with physical disabilities could turn to OPI as well.
So, Jacqueline, is there any time limit on the relative foster care program? For example, if a veteran came back, had a disability, but just needed maybe short-term care from family members until they either were fitted with a prosthesis or maybe learned how to use a wheelchair, could take care of themselves, is there a short-term time that they could participate in the program?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I don't have a clear answer for you on that, but that program does serve short-term and long-term, but primarily it's long-term. But if you only needed it short-term and there weren't other services available, it's possible. I mean, there's income criteria there and impairment level criteria to meet, but for the most part, I'm sure it is something that could be, I think it's malleable to that end, so. I think this is a new day for us, though, to look at using it for veterans who are just returning, who are suffering from various ailments. But it's basically a value and it's a policy of the state of Oregon that we serve people at home or in a non-facility environment. So probably could be worked out.
Are there any other questions from Ms. Zimmer? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You mentioned a little bit the budget numbers for the relative foster care program. I'm wondering if there's a waiting list now for that program, or if they're able to accommodate all the applicants who qualify. Or do you know?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I believe that the program is probably close to capacity, and that what we would do, each office is allowed to do things differently, but for the most part, my assumption is that it's at close to capacity, and we develop waiting lists for that particular program. you know, there are other programs around besides relative foster care. I mean, just simply getting an in-home care provider to come into your home would also be an option. A client-employed provider, that's an option, although the governor did cap that as well at 21,500 individuals. But I'm hopeful that'll be lifted. But there are options like that available as well. So it wouldn't be necessarily a relative, but you could, if it was somebody that you knew that was willing to sign up to be a client-employed provider and go through a little bit of training and the criminal background check, you could end up hiring somebody that you know to provide the care to you as well in your own home.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Thank you, Ms. Zimmer. You're welcome. Is there anyone else here today that would like to testify on House Bill 2852? Then I would like to close the hearing on House Bill 2852. And I would like to open the hearing on House Bill 2914. Oh, whoops, I skipped out of order. Sorry about that. I'd like to close the hearing on House Bill 2914 and open the hearing on House Bill 2861. That's what happens when you take
Madam
bills
Chair,
out of order.
Your first cat count.
House Bill 2861 establishes a program to provide housing grants not to exceed a blank amount per family to veterans for temporary housing. It appropriates a blank amount of general fund to the program. It declares an emergency taking effect July 1st, 2005.
This morning we have Jim Willis with the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs as our first testifier.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jim Willis, Director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. House Bill 2861 is not in the governor's budget. I would just like to state that for the record. Secondly, should House Bill 2861 become law in our state, I would respectfully suggest that on line 5, where it makes reference to county service officers working in consultation with the director, that in fact be changed to veteran service officers working in consultation, and here is why. In addition to the county veteran service officers, Oregon is also served by some national service officers who would also, I believe, need to have input into the emergency housing requests for veterans in need of this temporary housing. In addition to that, the veteran service counselors who represent the state of Oregon in both the Portland and Salem offices should have some input here. That way we have the broadest possible representation in our safety net for this group of veterans. And other than that, that would be the only comment or testimony that I would have on House Bill 2861. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Boquist.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair, now that Madam Chair is here. We'll get this terminology down right. Jim, are there other existing programs that could be piggybacked upon were the county veteran service officers and veteran service officers appropriately funded to direct them to those programs?
Chair, this is really confusing. Vice Chair Farr and Representative Boquist. What's interesting, and I thought about testifying to this, and I left it out, so now that you've asked the question, let me just say, we are about to establish, I believe, in Oregon, a very broad Veterans Emergency Fund that I think can apply to a myriad of interests on the part of our veterans and their families. This certainly could be part of such a fund, and that way you wouldn't have to establish a whole block of independent kinds of need funds. In other words, there would just be one, and people could make application to that on a case-by-case basis. So I hope that answers your question.
Follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. Jim, just a quick follow-up on the Veterans Emergency Fund that you mentioned. I think what I'm hearing you saying is that we could put housing grants in this, but it might also include things like home care, or it might include items along the lines of health care, emergency health care, or daycare, child care services. Is that the type of fund you're talking about?
Yes, sir. And the other thing that I heard mentioned before was some temporary transportation costs for seeking employment and that kind of thing.
Okay.
So, yes, it could be very broad.
Okay. Thank you, Madam. Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Madam Vice Chair.
Representative Nelson, do you have a question?
Yes. Thank you, Vice Chair Farr. Good morning, America.
Yeah, there we go.
I had to do that. And I apologize for being late, but it was for another emergency issue that is plaguing our state. And I'd just like to give the reason why, if I could, if you'd let me, Director Willis.
Yes, ma'am. That's your committee.
Well,
yes,
this is a sick situation in our state right now, is that numerous households are receiving apparently by car, a package, plastic envelope or bag with rocks in it and a horrible message in it relative to the Ku Klux Klan. Mm. And this has been apparently prevalent across the state, and required attention immediately today and yesterday and the day before. So it's sick. So I do apologize for not being here, but I'd just like to go on the record saying it's a despicable thing to be occurring. Back to House Bill 2861. Director Willis, would you be willing to work with the county service veteran officers as well as the national officers if we could make it all inclusive instead, maybe we don't need in consultation, maybe we could just say in coordination with? Would that be acceptable to you?
Madam Chair, absolutely. Sure.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions for Mr. Stenbridge?
Mr. Willis?
There are just too many gems in the room. That's the problem. Too many gems. Thank you, Mr. Willis.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Farr, excuse me one moment before he leaves.
One moment, Mr. Willis.
Oh, okay.
If I could, please.
Yes.
Director Willis, do you know how many homeless vets we have?
Madam Chair, I don't have that information with me, but there is a published number that's based on an estimation for our state. I certainly can get that to you today.
Would you please need a follow-up?
Yes, follow-up.
And Director Willis, is it possible that we could find by county that number?
I believe that's possible, Madam Chair.
Thank you so much.
Yes.
Is there anyone else who would like to testify? All right. And I'd like to close the hearing on House Bill 2861. And now I would like to open the hearing on House Bill 2914.
Madam Chair, House Bill 2914 expands elderly rental assistance programs to include veterans and the members and spouses of organized militia, including the Oregon National Guard and military reserve forces. This bill also has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Oh, okay. I'll carry one of these guys out there.
This is.
I relinquish the gavel, Madam
Day,
Chair.
I should say. Did we.
We've
opened the hearing. All right. Vice Chair Representative Farr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Debbie Farr, State Representative for House District 14. I'm here this morning to talk to you about House Bill 2914. And my comments will be brief. In Lane County,
One out of every three children come from a family that will access a food box this year. And Lane County is not much different from the counties that many of you represent. Along with the food insecurity that those families experience, they also experience housing insecurity. And I want to illustrate that point by telling you a story, if the committee will indulge me. At one point, I worked at an elementary school in my district called Fairfield Elementary, and it's in a high-poverty area. And when I was employed there, I actually worked with one student as his mentor, helping to adapt curriculum for him. But in the class, in his fourth-grade class, there was a student who was in a very, very sad family situation, and the class was asked to draw a picture of their dream home. So, to give you an idea, you know, a lot of the kids drew swimming pools and spas and, you know, space age things, servants. But this one little boy, and I'll never forget it, he drew a picture of a house that had three rooms, and there was a room for himself and his sister and his mother. And he said he especially wanted this this room for his mother so that she could have her own room. And the reason that this was his dream house was because while both of his parents were employed, they had extremely low income jobs, and as you know, housing is very expensive in Oregon, especially in Lane County, rental housing. And Representative Hunt is going to...
Representative Farr, what would that be? What is
I'm going to let Representative Hunt talk about that because he actually has statistics to present to you. But in any case, the family was... The father had left, and the family, the mother and the two children, were on their own. And while she did have a job, she wasn't able to earn enough to provide housing for them. They were in temporary housing, and later I found that they had become homeless. And, you know, I think that it's important for all of us to understand that, you know, we have homes with amenities that we take for granted, and this family would have been very happy with just four walls and a roof. The child just really would have appreciated to have a space that each of them could exist in and keep their family together. So with that, I'm going to let Representative Hunt present his statistics.
For the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Representative Dave Hunt from Clackamas County. And I'm not, I will give a couple of statistics. I think there will be some folks testifying to follow that have some greater level specificity, especially about the rent percentages. I mean, in general, if you look at Oregon compared to other states, we obviously have a huge challenge because we have a higher percentage of those facing issues around hunger. Working Oregonians in two-income households have a hunger rate four times higher than the rest of the nation. And I know that you, Madam Chair, have a special passion around that. If you look at just two-parent households with children, the hunger rates are more than three times the national average. So we clearly have a huge problem in terms of food insecurity in Oregon. If you then start breaking that down between those who own a home, those who rent, and those who may be homeless, this bill really tries to focus in on that middle category, those who rent, which, if you look at the national statistics, food security in Oregon among renters is significantly higher, a full 3 percentage points, than even compared with renters in the rest of the country. So we've got a huge problem here. Representative Farr and I have also introduced a bill, which Representative Boquist had the opportunity to hear yesterday, that would really deal with the whole issue for all low-income Oregonians in terms of rent. The bill before you really takes one specific segment of that and says even if we cannot afford to fulfill the whole, to respond to the issue for all low-income Oregonians who rent, perhaps we have at least the opportunity to deal with the problem for veterans and returning soldiers. And so if you look at this bill, it really builds on the model of what we already have as a very successful elderly rental assistance program. Already in place, already functioning successfully. And it really expands that program in two specific ways. And if you look at the bottom of the testimony that you should have in front of you, on the very bottom of that first page, it talks about The first way it expands it is under Section 2, subsection 3A. The rental assistance would be extended to all veterans regardless of age. Right now, the elderly assistance program applies only to those 58 and older. Obviously, we have a lot of veterans in Oregon who are 58 and younger. This would extend that program to all veterans in Oregon using the exact same income criteria, the exact same standards that currently apply to the elderly rental assistance program. And secondly, it would extend it to anyone who is deployed through the Guard or the Reserves and their spouses, regardless of their income. And so in any year that they would be deployed, and we may need to do some amendment work to clean up this language in Section 2, Subsection 4A, to make it clear when exactly it applies when they're under the status under Title 10. But the intent that Representative Farr and I are bringing is for any part of a year that they are deployed, that they would qualify for the rental assistance for the entirety of that year, for any part of a year that they are deployed. The difference between the two, under the veterans piece, it is dependent on income. Under the second piece related to deployment, to those who have been deployed, it is not income dependent. If you look at other states, today 26 states as well as the District of Columbia have programs similar to this that provide rental assistance through the state for low-income renters. And if you look at the standards, especially for veterans, that they have to qualify for, the income standards are tremendously low here. Under the current statute, it would have to be household income of a taxpayer less than $10,000. That's household income today. And so a veteran and his or her spouse, that is tremendously low income. We actually have an amendment that's been drafted to at least raise that up to 100% of the federal poverty level, which would both adjust it for inflation over time instead of just fixing it in at $10,000, but would also change it so any veteran who has multiple dependents, their dependents would then be counted to a different level on the federal poverty level. But applying that standard and the other standard that's in here is that their gross rent must exceed 20% of their household income. So you can see a specific example in my testimony that I will not go over. I think the bottom line here, as our chair has often reminded us, that we should be doing all we can to address the critical needs facing veterans and returning soldiers. This is one of those areas, and we have some other bills, obviously, that have been introduced this session that deal with those who own and ways to deal with property tax deferral and other assistance for those who own homes. This is really targeted specifically at the segment of those veterans and those returning soldiers who rent. And we would encourage your favorable consideration and welcome any amendments that you, Madam Chair, or other members of the committee may have.
Thank you, Representative Hunt and Representative Farr. And I want to thank you for bringing this bill. And I'm so grateful you care. I've served on the Hunger Task Force, and I see Patty Whitney Wise here, and she's absolutely incredible and diligent with fervor on this issue. And I did introduce a bill that has already passed committee, I believe, to remove our lowest income from the tax bracket in our state. So hopefully we'll continue to work every way we can to assist these individuals. Have you been able to get any information from the schools regarding kids that are hungry or on free meals in your district or county?
There are probably the best statistics are those related to the school districts, the individual schools that qualify for free and reduced lunch. And it's amazingly prevalent. I mean, I represent a completely suburban district, and it's amazing how many of those schools have 40, 50, 55, 60% who qualify for free and reduced lunches, which tells you more about the income than the income standards in those neighborhoods than it does necessarily about how hungry they may be. But these issues around, as you know, around poverty and hunger go hand in hand.
I was greatly appalled to hear that there is some bill floating around this Capitol that would eliminate or restrict this program because the meals at school are often the only meals for some of our kids.
So. Well, Representative Nelson, I might add, too, that the school, Fairfield Elementary, that I was talking about, 75% of the school population qualifies for free and or reduced lunch. And many of those children also eat breakfast. They serve probably 100 to 150 breakfasts each day.
That's wonderful. And would you know where do your two counties, Lane and Clackamas, how do they rate in the state as far as income levels?
You know, Madam Chair, I would defer to Patty Whitney Wise on that, because I bet she has those numbers right in the back of her mind. Maybe not, if she's nodding no behind
well,
me.
Well, she is incredible, I'll tell you. Okay. Thank you. Any other questions?
Yeah.
Representative Bruin.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representatives. My question is just what brought your, when you were working on this bill and thinking this through, what got you to the assistance program rather than a tax credit approach to doing this?
Well, the idea, of course, is that it's a tax credit for low-income renters, and specifically this bill would deal with veterans, and I think Representative Hunt and I, in hearing testimony and in hearing about families that were really severely impacted financially when the husband and father was deployed, you know, it made us realize that that we wanted to do something to give them some aid with their rental costs, because so many of them are young families.
So, and Madam Chair, Representative Bruin, I think the fact that we have this successful elderly rental assistance program already in place, I don't think we would have necessarily gone here if there were not already this program in place that was already being administered, had already been implemented successfully.
Thank you.
Representative Hunt and Representative Ford, have you any information on our veterans by age bracket, how many we have in the various age brackets?
I don't
see anybody from Veteran Affairs here any longer, unfortunately. So we'll have to ask them that question. And also, I think by location, again, is important. It seems to relate. I was amazed, but I was so proud of the ceremony last week and when the 162nd official welcome home ceremonies occurred last Thursday. It was just awesome. But I was so astounded, you know, at how young, you know, these veterans are. And they are indeed a legend. And I agree with those who spoke. What they've done is just beyond my comprehension. So I'm amazed at how little they get paid for serving and then come home to unemployment. I mean, it's disgraceful. However, I do want to compliment all those businesses that rallied around the troops. I was pleased here to hear that even our security in this building interviewed some 53 members of the 162nd. It made me so proud. In fact, one of the security officers, I think I'm going to make a career of this, you know, keeping them in jobs, and I love it. Somehow, you know, I think we've got to continue to communicate, but, you know, hunger and poverty and homelessness are here. And for anyone who thinks otherwise, I think we need to continuously keep this information available for them, you know, to understand this. So,
absolutely, Madam Chair. And if I might say on that, I think there are a variety of proposals. Some have been introduced by you, some by Representative Farr and I, and by others that will address those broader issues around poverty and hunger. I think the challenge of this legislative session is there are so few dollars on the table that we, through the focus of this committee, may be able, as opposed to kind of an all-or-nothing scenario where we try and pass a larger fix or don't do it at all, we may be able to through this committee, focus in on areas like this where we at least deal with a segment of the population and therefore the segment of the problem, enabling future legislators to come back and hopefully fill in other pieces of that spectrum. We will not have fully solved the problem. I might also say you're going to hear some other testimony today that will outline, it's I'm almost thinking of it kind of like an a la carte menu. You've got two specific additions to the elderly rental assistance program here, one for veterans, one for returning troops. You'll hear a couple of other proposals that would change the income guidelines, that would add disabled population. as we get the fiscals back on these, that may help guide us to which pieces of the a la carte menu we can best afford. But fundamentally, at least in the long term, we should be doing all of them.
Great. Any other Representative Boquist?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I guess for Representative Ford, just a comment and a question. My district has all the same hunger and housing problems, but my five rural counties aren't like Lane County, so just so we have that down.
I'm not sure what you mean by that, Representative Boquist.
Mine are slightly more conservative than your counties are.
What does that mean?
On page 4 of the bill, yeah, line 7, it says a member is in status under Title 10 of the United States Code. What we're talking about is the active duty soldiers are there. Would you be amenable to some modifications of Title 10, Title 32? And the issue I'm raising here, and a question in your response, Madam Chair, is, as example, enlisted soldiers that are on active duty, we used the pay grade before, I think, in another kind of staff sergeant, receive about $693 in housing allowance. The average specialist, which is probably the average grade of a deployed soldier from Oregon, receives about $542 in housing allowance. Those are tax-free. I don't have a problem with that in regards to this bill. And even the single master sergeant that's retired sitting back here, we're back on active duty, would receive $808. However, I know there's, I believe, five colonels sitting in this room, including myself, and we would receive about $1,215 a month in tax-free money. And, you know, while I would love to have a tax break of such magnitude, I don't think it's fair. I think we need to go back and address the housing, the basic housing allowance that is tax-free from the government, and cover those soldiers even on Title 10 and Title 32 that are in need, either because they're in the poverty level or because of their deployment status. But to say a colonel like myself who gets $1,215 a month, that I would get a tax break, I think is in fact blatantly unfair. And if I can't manage my other $8,000 in revenue I get from being deployed per month, then there's a problem. But if you'd be amenable to that, I think we could work on some of the language.
Thank you, Representative Boquist. This is something that we've already discussed, so I know that Representative Hunt and myself would be happy to work with you on the amendments.
Any other questions? I want to thank both of you, and you both make me proud. I'd like to call Patty Whitney Wise. And as the good director of the Hunger Task Force is coming forward, I just one more time want to tell you how blessed we are to have this woman with incredible energy and commitment leading that program in our state. Besides that, she sings like a bluebird, and hopefully she'll do so in our session.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. For the record, I'm Patty Whitney Wise with the Oregon Hunger Relief Task Force, and I hope my husband's listening. No.
I do too.
Just a couple of comments before I present my testimony. For your information, one of the returning members of the 162nd is the husband of one of my employees, and we've been really supporting her during this last year and a half as she has managed two small children, and we're very happy that he made it home. The other is that we will get for you the county rankings on poverty. I believe that's probably your best example. We may even have some ranking by numbers of children in poverty, and I'll make sure that you receive that. We're here to support House Bill 2914. As you heard from our representatives who are co-authoring this bill, this is a piece of a larger proposal that the task force is tackling this year, with the understanding that because housing costs are so high in our state, it's making it very difficult for many families to put food on the table. They're putting that money into rent instead. In fact, there was a recent report by the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco, which ranks Oregon as 48th worst in rental affordability and 49th worst in the number of severely cost-burdened renter households. Those are renter households paying more than 50% of their income on housing. We have seen this problem as more families come to the Oregon Food Bank, food box programs around the state, and families report that rent is one of the reasons they're coming, because they just don't have the money left over for food. Our philosophy is that a hardworking family should be able to afford housing and still meet their basics. There are over 100,000 Oregon households struggling to pay rent with incomes under the poverty level. It's a big problem. And many veterans' families, as you know, have sacrificed much for their country, including the wages they might have received had they not been deployed. We feel that the renter's tax credit would be very helpful for these families and giving them some additional income, and so we support this measure, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you have. Thank you very much.
Questions of the good director? Representative Boker.
Madam Chair, I guess for the record, same question I asked before. I saw your head nodding.
Yes.
In regards to the some of the individuals on active duty who receive basic housing allowance, which is above, well above the poverty level.
Yes.
And the second item that I forgot to point out also is that if you don't spend that money on housing, then the federal government can take it back. And that means if we gave them a discount and it was less than, and it was proven that it was less than, that fund would be that money would have to be refunded. So we're actually losing federal dollars in some of these categories.
Yeah.
But I'm assuming you would occur there should be some sort of need basis so that
absolutely
the more affluent officers don't receive this benefit.
We would be very supportive of that.
Let me ask the good administrator, do we have anyone here from housing in the state that you're aware of? Perhaps we could ask them to be present on Thursday. Patty, I am always, you know, working on finding somebody a home, and often it's my home and sleep under the ping pong table. But that's better than no home.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me why, you know, even in our programs in the state, where individuals, and I'm not sure of the what program they're come under, where they work with the state on housing, they're registered with the state to provide housing for these type of people, and they are subsidized?
You're talking about homeless families or low-income families? Most of the money going into helping to subsidize rent for low-income families comes out of the Section 8 housing, which is a federal program, and unfortunately that's been cut back both this year and is slated for additional cuts in the next federal budget, which means there already are very long waiting lists in most communities for the Section 8 housing, the subsidized housing. Many, many families don't receive it, which is one of the reasons we have such a high hunger rate, because people are having to pay market rate even though they're eligible for subsidized housing. That's being cut back federally, and so it's going to create more of a problem in the future, unfortunately. It is run through the state, but it is federal funding that is being eliminated.
Patty, could we work on a state program like Section 8?
We certainly could. It would cost a fair amount of money and a very tight budget year. I think our better priority is to continue working with our federal delegation to let them know how important these programs are and that they should not be cut. And that is part of what we're doing.
Could, I don't know, perhaps later you could recommend to our administrator and to me whom we should go to. Just because we say it's a tight budget year, I don't think that excuses us.
Madam Chair, I would be happy. I would be happy to do that. I will work with Housing and Community Services on that.
And under Section 8, I just want to say, even under that program, these rents are atrocious to me. $750 a month.
Madam Chair, a lot of the Section 8 housing, well, that may be the total cost of the rent. The family pays a percent based on their income, so they would be paying much less than that, and the subsidy would cover the remaining rent. It depends on the size of the unit. If they're large units for larger families, then the rent obviously is going to be higher.
And my concern also is that as I look at some of these facilities, I don't think they're worth $750 a month rent. So I'm anxious to hear from Section 8 how we determine that and what we can do. Any other questions of the good director? Patty, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for all you do.
Thank you.
I'd like to call Colonel Mike Caldwell. And I'll just ask Jacqueline Zimmer to come up. Is she still here? Yeah. To come on up, too, please. Colonel Caldwell, welcome. And I want to just take this time to say some good words about you, because you have been so committed to the military and our veterans, and by being here, I don't even know how you do what you do with all your demand, all the demands on you, but you've been here religiously, and I want to thank you for it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Oh, that's all right. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Colonel Mike Caldwell. I'm the Deputy Director of the Oregon Military Department. And today I would like to, for the record, state that this 2914 is not within the governor's budget, and we haven't considered it. So therefore, I officially can't support this. However, if the committee was to move forward with such a bill, I would suggest that Representative Boquist's earlier comments reference Title 32 status be considered. As indicated with the pay chart, typically when the majority of the soldiers who are deployed receive the tax-free basic allowance for housing, and most often that's more than adequate to take care of most of their needs. It's not always the case, because in some cases you have soldiers who take significant pay cuts when they're deployed, and then that creates other pressures on their income and on their style of life. But there are protections under the federal law to have them defer housing payments and this sort of thing, so they can manage that a little bit better than somebody who is a lower income. So that's a very small percentage. However, when, as you indicated earlier, when you spoke with the Oregon State Police representative of 52 people that he did, 52 or 53 people he talked to last week at the job fair, as we've indicated in the news media, 40% of the soldiers returning from the 2nd Battalion, 162nd Infantry, are either unemployed upon return or were unemployed when they were mobilized. Now, that's a significant group of people. Obviously, the majority of them are from central, mid to southern Willamette Valley, literally Salem to Portland or to Eugene. We also had a significant number out of Portland. This bill, I think, addresses a good number of those folks. And once they return, they no longer get that basic allowance for housing. And you don't get a basic allowance for housing on your drill pay either. That's not part of your drill pay. So the only time you receive that is if you're on Title 10 active duty, or you get a payment for some sort of active duty in Title 32 status, which is then calculated based on the number of days you served. So, for instance, if you serve 15 days of annual training, you would get 50% of that sum. So you can't live on that. One time a year, you can't live on that. So the fact of the matter is that probably our biggest, what we see, our biggest requirement is that when we see Title 32 soldiers, typical National Guardsmen who drill 2 days a month and are either unemployed or underemployed, which is, I think, a better status for most of our people, are underemployed, and they have significant pressures on them for housing and significant pressures on them for taking care of their families. So I would highly recommend that Representative Boquist's comments be added into this under Title 32 status, and have a place for them to seek some assistance so they can better care for their families when they're not deployed.
Colonel Caldwell, do you know of any other group of state employees who make so little, have no medical benefits, have no other special PERS programs as these Oregon Guardsmen?
Madam Chair, I think that would be pretty hard to find. I know that there are, I mean, and this may be somewhat of a surprise to some people, but I know we have some state employees who are relatively new into the workforce, who have, typically office specialist one job or some low-ranking job, and it's very meager, very meager. They do get benefits. They do get a retirement. There's no question about that. There's about 40% roll-ups on all of 40-some percent. I think it is now 42% for those kind of costs for state employees, but you know, we've had single parents employed at the military department who are OS1, Office Specialist 1, and they typically, we've had several of them leave and go back to some sort of welfare status because they can't subsist on that, even though they're trying to work themselves out of a welfare situation. So simply having a state job doesn't always solve the problem either. I can assure you that, but there are certainly better state jobs than the two-day-a-month typical guardsman. I'll guarantee you that.
I'm going to ask our good administrator, who has such nice shoes on today. Are those Nikes?
They are not.
I'm ashamed. You know, that is a state business. But anyway, it employs people. I should think you'd wear Nikes. Yes. I'd like you to ask the PEBB to come to the committee and just let us know how our military state employees rank with the other 250,000 in the state, please. Thank you, Colonel Caldwell.
Yes, ma'am.
Any questions of the Colonel? Representative Bolfus.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mike, can you give me, we know Title 10, Title 32, that issue we understand. And of course, I have an unfair issue over to the two sponsors of this because I'm looking at the National Guard Almanac here that tells me anything else. What kind of language could we put in that would ensure the enlisted soldiers who need help get the help, and those of us who are in the higher grades who don't need help? And mind you, it's got to be language that's we're talking about that covers maybe the traditional reservists versus the Title 10. You follow my questioning?
Madam Chair, Representative Bocos, I do believe there's a total income requirement in here. Household income of the taxpayer is less than $10,000. That's on page 3, line 39. You might be able to do it by using that total income cap as a, you know, or playing with that number to, you know, to get into that group that you and I were talking about, which is typically the E4, E5, probably E5 and below, pay grade E5 as a sergeant in our business. And I think that might be the biggest group that you'd want to deal with. Rank has no absolute that you're doing well if you're a higher ranking person, but I would bet that if we ran if we took the time and the effort to run the income levels of rank, I would almost guarantee you that the largest number, probably in the 90 percentile, is below the rank of pay grade E5, and above that rank.
That's a 16,000.
Madam Chair, the pay grade E5 rank is, I think, probably, I'm gonna guess around $25,000-$30,000 a year.
Deployed or?
That's deployed.
I'm talking about not in.
Non-deployed. That's probably going to earn that individual around $6,000 a year, $5,000,
$6,000. Oh, wow.
If that's their only income. My point is that typically when you get to staff sergeant, which is pay grade E6, well, what I have observed in my career is that those folks are typically employed. They're the group that we try desperately to retain, and we have difficulty retaining because they're good middle managers, good middle road leaders. And they're employed in the community because they've got good skills, they've got good leadership ability, and some of that we've helped create that, obviously, and that's where we struggle to retain that group of people because they're highly sought after in their normal workplace. It's that E1, 2, 3, 4, 5 where they're just young, they're coming up, they're early 20s, they've got a wife, they've got a child and a half, and on a car payment, and they're renting. And they're sometimes employed, sometimes not. They're not a stable employment picture in that group of kids. Whereas you get a little older and a little higher rank, and that's pretty stable individual typically.
And do you know if we've been able, through our efforts to, and I'm so appreciative of those employers in our state who hire our military or veterans, to eliminate these hiring our guard now, asking them, if they're staying in the guard, I mean, have we done something about that yet? And let these employers, potential employers, know that that's not a question you can ask.
Madam Chair, representative members of the committee, it's not a legal question to ask a job applicant. We have, as I think I've mentioned before in this group, the Employer Support of the Guard and Reserve Committee, which is a volunteer group of typically retired businessmen and women who work with employers and do what they can at different business associations, rotary clubs, this sort of thing, to explain what they do, which is really to inform businesses of what the federal law is and what their responsibilities are as an employer of a guard or reservist. That group has been very effective, I think, in large part to the media focus we've had on the deployments and also some of the stories that you just mentioned. So I think we're doing what we can in a subtle manner. Certainly, we can't command every business to come to a presentation, but we've certainly made efforts throughout the state because we have this group well established throughout every region of the state, and they have made great inroads, and they're very committed, and they're very dedicated. In fact, you had asked earlier at an earlier hearing about this very issue, and I have three members of that group who can come and speak to you.
We'd like that.
And if you tell me when you want them, they're available this Thursday.
That's
or I can
good.
Reschedule them, or I can do whatever you
ask
want.
Them to, please ask them to come.
Okay.
Very
I
important.
Can, I can do that, and they'll be here to tell you what they do, and I think that'll give you a good feeling for the efforts that they're putting forth to inform businessmen, business leaders, and business owners, and employers in general. And that's probably the most positive thing we can do with respect to that issue.
Thank you. Any other questions of the good Colonel?
Yeah.
Representative Holquist?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I just want to get on the record so Colonel Caldwell can confirm it, that under the basic housing allowance rules, that a soldier, sailor, or airman that receives basic housing must spend that money on that housing, and if it's not spent on that housing, in fact, the government can take it back.
Madam Chair, Representative Boquist, that's correct. In fact, as he's indicated, in some instances, if the state was to make a direct payment and called it, quote-unquote, housing assistance, then that would be absolutely in conflict, as the good representative indicated, and then that would be withdrawn. So there is, you can supplement, you can add two, but you've got to do it in a very creative way, I guess, is the right term. And I think what I see in the bill rather does that. And again, I think we're talking more in the sense of those that are not on federal Title X active duty. In our situation, that is the largest need, not the Title X guys.
Okay, any other questions, Representative Hunt?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. That just raised one question in my mind. If, especially for the lower pay grade folks who are activated, if they are utilizing that money for housing, is there an issue? I mean, if they have three or four kids back home, that is not adjusted at all. I assume they just get that same amount based on their pay grade. They get the same housing allowance, regardless of whether they are a single person or they have five dependents back home.
Madam Chair, Representative Hunt, no, that's not the case. There are two levels of basic allowance for housing. One is for single and one is for married. So you have, and you also have basic allowance for subsistence. And that, again, is regulated depending on whether you're married with dependents or without dependents. So they have different numbers and different levels. So you get less as a single person than you do as a married person.
Any other questions? Thank you. Representative Farr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Colonel Caldwell, you think that if we did want to continue with Title X, if we added an amendment specifically stating that it would be supplemental to their monthly housing allowance?
Madam Chair, Representative Farr, I believe that would be the right thing. What I would prefer to do is talk to our Judge Advocate General folks and ask them how we craft any language in there that would not be viewed as replacement, supplanting the BAH or the BAS, basic allowance for housing or subsistence. I think that would be the smarter move to do and make sure that we craft the thing properly before I emphatically state that on the record.
I am really remiss, and I'm so sorry, but I hope he's listening. The individual who took the time to interview those 53 was sitting in this room, and I didn't realize it till he walked out the door just now. So I want to thank him for going above and beyond the call of duty and interviewing our troops.
Madam Chair, that was a very successful job fair. We plan to have another one in about 4 weeks.
All right. Please let us know, because we've had numerous responses to our emails and faxes we've sent across the state, and we'll continue to work on it.
It was very gratifying to see those employers and their enthusiasm to get these people hired.
Madam Chair, Colonel Caldwell, I would very much like to know the details of that when you know them. I'm a member of 5 chambers of commerce, and I'd like to make sure that my chambers know about the job fairs. Some of your troops live in every single one of the areas where my chambers are active.
Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, we certainly will. In fact, unsolicited, I received a call from the lobbyist for the chambers here in the building, and she put out a worldwide email about 5 or 6 days before that thing and to all the chambers. So, and she's also promised me that she would publish some of what she saw in the Statesman in the chamber newsletter that goes out statewide. So I think, generally speaking, thanks in large part to the efforts of you all on this committee, getting people interested in and, you know, using your bully pulpit has helped a good number of these young men who are unemployed. And I guess the real next test is to see if we can get them decompressed and get them back into the flow and get them into a working status, because there was certainly no shortage of willing employers. I would suggest that every one of those kids could have gotten a job that night, maybe not exactly what they wanted, but they certainly could have had a job if that was a necessity. And a lot of what we've been doing is trying to match their skills and their interests with the right employer. That takes a little time, but certainly it was a tremendous success.
Great.
And I will do that.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you again so much. Jacqueline?
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Jacqueline Zimmer with the Oregon Association of Area Agencies on Aging and Disabilities, and I help the county veteran services officers. Before I testify today, Madam Chair, to some proposed amendments to this, I'd like to introduce Dustin Withy. And Dustin is an intern, a senior at Western Oregon University, and he's joined us this session, and we have assigned all of the veteran services issues to him. So I thought that today might be a good day for him to offer some testimony on this particular piece of legislation. So if you don't mind, I'll turn it over to him, and then I'll speak to the amendments that we have in mind.
Thank you, and welcome, Dustin. I want to say that Western Oregon makes me proud.
Thank you.
And you're a perfect example. They're the one in the university system that has contained their costs so that our veterans' education can be covered there. The only one in the university system that has done that. So not only did I attend there and served on their foundation board, but I know this is real. Would you hold just one moment, please? I want this one of our security officers to come forward for just a moment, please, sitting back here. Thank you, Jacqueline. And this is the man I was just talking about, and I want him to come forward because I was really impressed that he took the time to do what he did.
Thank you. My name is Ken Skippers. I'm retired sergeant, Oregon State Police. It was just a great experience to be able to recruit. Wanted to thank especially Colonel Caldwell for making that opportunity. One of the things that made it very rewarding were two people that I got to meet that I actually knew when I was up at Subbase Bangor, and it was just to see familiar faces. It was very rewarding. So, well, sorry, I'm a little emotional from it, so
that's
I apologize
right.
for that.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your service.
In fact, I just wanted to also say that one of the things I saw that I'd never seen before was one of the specialists that was wearing a combat infantry badge also had a submarine warfare badge, and I'd never seen both of those on Desert Camo before. So, but pretty remarkable experience for him. So
yeah.
I hope we're able to make him a job offer.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you for your service in more ways than one. We're most grateful. And want to honor you today by saying I just think that was above and beyond the call of duty, and I'm so proud of you.
That was a great experience for me, too.
Any
thank you.
Questions for Mr. Stiples? Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You can come back if you would. Thank you for giving up your seat. Dustin.
All right. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Dustin Withy. Last Thursday, as you are all well aware of, 700 soldiers from the Oregon Guard 2nd Battalion, 162nd Infantry, were officially demobilized, making their transition from military to civilian service. My statistics were a little different from the colonel's. I found that 50% of them had no jobs to return to. And some of them, of course, didn't have jobs when they left, and others saw them disappear while they were serving. I have some other information regarding the need for access to affordable housing for veterans. I found that 8,450 veterans are homeless in the state of Oregon. And the Department of Veterans Affairs Homeless Providers Grant funds 143 beds in Oregon for those veterans. And that leaves...
Would you say that one more time? Start with the 8,450.
Okay, there are 8,450 homeless veterans in the state of Oregon. And the Department of Veterans Affairs Homeless Providers Grant funds 143 beds for homeless Oregon veterans.
It's right in here.
Go ahead, please.
And that leaves 8,307 veterans without beds. The number of homeless veterans in Portland varies from 13% to 30% of the total homeless population for the city. There are many reasons why we have homeless veterans in the state of Oregon, but one of the main reasons that we can't forget is cost. And the U.S. housing market conditions for the fourth quarter of 2004, which is the most current report, showed that September 2004, a one-bedroom apartment in Portland cost $550 per month, a two-bedroom cost $725 per month, and a three-bedroom unit moved up to $850 to $1,050 per month. Add to this the cost of utilities, fuel, public services, which average $2,631 a year. You can also add food costs, vehicle costs, which add, of course, more on top of that. And then another reason that some veterans are homeless involves the lack of understanding of the federal benefits programs, as we're all aware of. And Janice...
Why those county veteran service officers are so important. We must fund them.
Yeah, exactly. Janice Raisel, the Clark County Veteran Services Officer, said that many wartime veterans are disabled and therefore they can't work or earn income to pay for housing. And that's in Clackamas County. And others have substantial problems with symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. And Patricia Brillon and Kim Grooms are Linn County Veteran Services Officers. And Patricia Brillon has a success story of a 52-year-old Vietnam veteran who was wounded in the leg and suffered greatly from post-traumatic stress disorder. Then he became addicted to heroin and was caught with that and was given an other-than-honorable discharge. He fought for 15 years to try to get benefits in order to survive. And had nothing. And he sought help from the Linn County Veteran Services Officers, and he ended up upgrading his discharge to a general discharge, which made him available for benefits. And he received his benefits as well as all the back benefits for all the years he was denied benefits. And this saved him from going into bankruptcy and homelessness because he was unemployed. Post-traumatic stress disorder can impact a person's daily activities very significantly. The National Center for Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder fact sheet states that the disorder is associated with impairments of the person's ability to function in social or family life, including occupational instability, marital problems and divorces, family discord, and difficulties in parenting. The National Vietnam Veterans Readjustment Study estimated in 1988 that the prevalence of post-traumatic stress disorder in that group alone was 15.2% at that time, and 30% had experienced the disorder at some point since returning from Vietnam. post-traumatic stress disorder has subsequently been observed in all veteran populations that have been studied, including World War II, the Korean conflict, and the Persian Gulf populations, and also in United Nations peacekeeping forces deployed to other war zones. Due to problems inherent with serving in wartime, such as injuries, disabilities, and post-traumatic stress disorder, many veterans are finding it difficult to afford housing throughout Oregon. Thank you.
That was excellent research and an excellent presentation. Questions of Dustin? Thank you so much for this information. We're most grateful.
Madam Chair, I might add for the record that since he's from Western Oregon, I'll take his 50% number.
I thought you were going to recruit him right then.
I'm going to do that in the hall afterwards.
Such a fine young man. All right.
And I got him first.
Oh, okay. Jacqueline, do you wish to add anything?
I do. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jacqueline Zimmer with the Oregon Association of Area Agencies on Aging and Disabilities. And one thing that we teach our interns that come to work with us is that life is just one big term paper after another and group project. And I very much appreciate Dustin's research on this issue and other issues as well. So I appreciate you allowing him to testify. Madam Chair, members, what O4AD was requesting today was to our intention earlier this session was to add people with physical disabilities 18 to 64 to the Elderly Rental Assistance Program. And when we saw Representative Hunt and Representative Farr's bill being proposed, we asked to be allowed to join on as an amendment to their bill. And the reason that we did that is because, again, we serve side-by-side seniors and people with physical disabilities, and it's just time that we allow the same services to the population that has the same needs. And so we, therefore, they've introduced amendments on our behalf to do this. And at the time that we were considering doing this, the Elderly Rental Assistance Program had a $1.1 million surplus in it, which was, in fact, then returned to the general fund and used to backfill the shortage in the Department of Revenue's budget. This was a couple of weeks ago. And we're quite clear that that money was not our money, but we were interested in having that applied and in place so that we could expand the Elderly Rental Assistance Program. So I think that anything that you do to expand this program obviously would take additional funds, and we'd certainly like to include people with physical disabilities. And there aren't as solid statistics for people with physical disabilities and their needs as there are in housing necessarily as there are with veterans, but we do know that about 349,000 people in Oregon consider themselves to have a form of disability, and it's usually one or two impairments. 349,000 people in Oregon report that they have a physical disability. And again, the Census Bureau hasn't caught up to the idea of tracking and delineating people with physical disabilities. And we're talking the 18 to 64, the MS, the stroke, the accident survivor kind of crowd. We don't have wonderful numbers, but we do know how many people with physical disabilities do come in and are receiving services in our offices. In some ways, we can delineate that information. And they have expenses that you and I do not have. I'm assuming that we all got ourselves dressed this morning, and I'm guessing we all drove our own cars here and got into the building by just any old door. And so life is different when you're a person with physical disability, and therefore rent is challenging. Actually, just finding housing that will accommodate you if you have a physical disability is a challenge. So the Elderly Rental Assistance Program, I think, would be very useful to people with physical disabilities. And we would ask that you raise the eligibility level to 185% of the federal poverty level. The current amount is low. I think that's why there was a surplus in there. There are plenty of people who earn over $10,000, and I think all of us would, if we were asked, well, you're close to being asked to live on $10,000 a year if you're living on a legislator's salary. That's why I never run for office.
And
smart woman.
And so that probably needs to be adjusted. Again, it's been a while since this program's received an update. But anyway, our goal is to have people with physical disabilities, and we are talking not the developmental disability crowd. We would have to redefine disabled person in here, but that's what we're looking for as well. So.
Thank you so much. And
thank you.
I want to just thank you for your undying support for our aging population and those with disabilities.
You're
most grateful. You've been a great leader.
Thank you.
Thank you. Questions of Jacqueline Ripley Hunt?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I assume that you see the advantage of switching from a dollar figure to the federal poverty level figure, whether it's 100% or 185%. As both the benefit that it would adjust for inflation, but do you also interpret that that would mean that if it were a single person, they would qualify for 185% of a single person household income, and if it were a person with four dependents, they would qualify for 185 of that place on the chart that has a family of five. Is that your understanding of how this would apply?
Madam Chair, Representative Hunt, I'm not entirely sure. I guess I think, as we discussed the other day, the more family you have, the higher your eligibility becomes, or the lower, whatever we would work that out. But again, a graduated requirement. So,
any other questions? Thank you, Alice. Oh, whoop, Representative Boquist.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry, I was just checking my notes. I guess to get to Ms. Zimmer, if we could get higher than what we are at the $10,000 level and we couldn't afford the poverty level, anything higher would be helpful, would it not?
Madam Chair, Representative Boquist, anything higher would be helpful. I would agree. And, in fact, if that was your choice or the way that it worked out, perhaps we'd recommend that we take another look at it in the next biennium and do checks to see if that shouldn't be adjusted as he's suggesting, or find a way to definitely look at it every session. Certainly.
Any other questions? Thank you all so very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And I'd like to call Phil Kennedy Wong, please. Welcome, Mr. Wong.
Good morning, Chair Nelson, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Philip Kennedy Wong, representing Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon. We are the State Association of Churches. I'm here to testify in support of House Bill 2914. I will keep my comments brief. I just want to say that the amendments that was proposed by Jacqueline Zimmer, and also the amendment proposed by Representative Boquist, we will be in support of. And in fact, as a former enlisted reservist, I was surprised to hear an officer say that. Not that enlisted guys have anything against officers.
Madam Chair, a few officers are good, okay?
Can I call on you, Representative Boquist, yes?
I can say that, you know, as a former enlisted man, you know, the officer corps do have slightly different accommodations. In fact, they eat in their own little special place, and enlisted guys have to go and, you know, hang out in their own special places. And anyway, I definitely appreciate that from the bottom of my heart. I do want to comment.
First of all, Phil, I want to thank you for your service.
Oh, thank you very much, Chair Nelson. I do want to say, during my time, I was a young person. I was putting myself through college and was active in the Marine Corps Reserves, and I can attest that a lot of my colleagues were, you know, working part-time or also going to college or both, or having family. So I can say personally from my observations that the incomes of people within the enlisted ranks, and also can't speak for the officer rank, but I do know for the enlisted ranks that the compensation wasn't as great as we would have liked. Let me just put it that way. There was a question in terms of the federal poverty level, and Patty Whitney Weiss has handed me the federal guidelines for the 2005 federal poverty guidelines, and I believe there was a question in terms of what the federal poverty level would be for 130%. Is that correct?
185.
185. For $185,000 for a single person, that would be $17,705, and that's roughly $1,475 per month in gross income, at approximately $8.51 per hour. I can repeat that again if folks would like.
17.
For a household of one, $17,705. That's annual, and gross monthly income is approximately $1,475, which works out to approximately $8.51.
You know what always bothers me? I remember my first job. I worked to bring women's wages up to $1,000 a month. And a few people ever talk net. You know, unfortunately, I had a difficult time, but explaining that we pay our rent out of net. You know, we may make, you know, $10,000 a month, but, I mean, I wish, a year. But what's left is maybe $8,000.
That's correct. In fact, Chair Nelson, first, let me thank Representatives Farr and Hunt for introducing this bill, while also introducing another bill that we support. That's House Bill 3110, which is a version of this bill that I think kind of addresses an earlier sentiment that you expressed, and that is having like some sort of statewide housing program. And I think HB 3110 attempts at doing that, because it's a much more broader in a sense that it allows renters to deduct part of their rent as part of a program, not necessarily like a tax credit program, but it's, for all intents and purposes, it's very close. But what it does, it kind of gives the same benefit that homeowners get, except for renters deducting the rent for a credit of up to $1,500, which is the difference where the state would pay between 30% of their household income and what they paid above that in terms of what their gross rent is. And obviously 2914 is 20% of their household income and above for as high as $2,100. But I think 3110 would go a long ways toward addressing that, and that would also include some of the same populations, I believe, that Jacqueline Zimmer had mentioned. So we do support... It was heard just yesterday in House Revenue. And obviously we would love to see that get passed, and it would really address all the different populations that we're concerned about, including enlisted men and women.
All right.
I do want to bring up one side note. It's somewhat related but different in a sense. The other day I'd come across an article in the newspaper, I believe it was the New York Times, that talked about Guard and Reserve members who are defaulting on their home mortgages because of their extensive deployment, and it's only recently become an issue because of the fact that so much of our service members who are deployed right now are members of the Guard and Reserve, and as a result, there's been people who are serving overseas who are actually losing their homes. And so there is a federal act that does prevent that from happening, but there are some folks within the financial institutions that are reluctant to give any sort of grace period for folks within the armed services. But I do want to bring that as intention, because housing is a very critical issue for members of the military.
This was the New York Times?
It was the New York Times. It was probably two and a half weeks ago, I believe.
We're going to look for it. Thank you. Representative Bocas.
Madam Chair, for the record, I think I speak for everybody in the committee here. If anybody in the room hears of a default or anything like that from a soldier who is deployed, we need to know about it.
Absolutely.
Fix that. The governor has staff through the military department that can help with that, and we have our own lawyers that can enforce the federal law as necessary.
Absolutely.
And I don't think there's a financial institution in the state of Oregon that wants to receive the wrath of 60 members of the House of Representatives. So,
well, you have to remember that our veteran population can change any vote in the state, so I think it's very important that...
Chair Nelson and Representative Boquist, I'll also will try to track down that
Thank
article.
You.
I want to say it was probably... a Monday edition of the paper. I just picked it up when I was in,
no,
you know,
that's great. And I want to tell you how quickly this committee responds. Once again, when our veterans were seeking jobs in the employment division of the state was not recognizing they were veterans, never asking the question, we found out they weren't considering they were veterans, and now they have signs in their offices that say, tell us first if you're a veteran, and second, how can we help you? So I love that. And then last Thursday, after our hearing here, and we reviewed the story in the Statesman where one of our returning guardsmen had lost his job working for the city in the meantime, which is not a proper thing to happen, as well as the Salem School District had done away with the job. At the ceremony, the 162nd, those agencies who were there certainly heard from this committee. I want to thank the leadership here, especially Brian Boquist and Representative Barnhart and Representative Farr for really getting on that subject, and I really appreciate it. Maybe in others, I'm not sure that Scott probably was involved, and imagine Dave was, but we want to make a difference, a positive difference when these things happen. I think it's despicable.
Go ahead. Thank you.
Madam Chair, while he's departing, just for record, I was an enlisted soldier for 5 years.
Your conscience is bothering you, Representative, and we do not have time for that at this time, but we'll pray for you.
I'm glad somebody prayed.
Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Wong. I should have asked if there were any questions. Hope. All right. If not, is there anyone else who'd like to testify on this bill, 2914? If not, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2914, and open a public hearing on on House Bill 2677. Is that it? Or 3326, did I miss? 3326, I beg your pardon. 3326. We have testimony coming forward. Please, Mr. Stembridge.
Madam Chair, House Bill 3326 requires that city and county business license fees be waived for veterans. In your packet, I attached a typical business license application from the city of Portland. And you'll see that attached to your summary of the measure.
Thank you very much, Mr. Stembridge. I always want to thank Erin. If it weren't for her, we couldn't, over here, Erin Siler, we could not even be having this meeting. I'd like to call on Kevin O'Reilly. Please come forward. Brian, you have Please. Also, for paralyzed veterans, I want to just thank Kevin O'Reilly, who's been very dedicated and committed to the veterans, and we're grateful. You likewise have been here loyally, and I appreciate it.
That's why I get paid the big bucks. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kevin O'Reilly. I'm representing the Oregon Paralyzed Veterans of America, and the organization opposes House Bill 3326. We feel that a veteran or a disabled veteran has obligations as a citizen to his community. Some of those are paying fees and other such things for conducting business in that community. We would, however, suggest that possibly as a jobs package, something.
I'm sorry?
Possibly as a job, part of a jobs package, or some way of getting back to work, a waiver of the initial business fee, business licensing fee, or a grant, something offered, some other way of helping that veteran get started in business. We would recommend a few limitations, possibly a one-time deal. Just because you're a veteran doesn't mean you're a good businessman. And there's somebody who is a good businessman and could do, I'll use a tavern for an example, start a tavern, run it for a few years, sell it, make a nice profit, start another tavern, sell it, make a nice profit, and go through life this way, milk the system, if you will. And we'd like to see that happen.
As you well know, some veterans are younger and some are older. We expect an older veteran would probably have some experience and some skills picked up over the years, and he would make a good tavern owner. And a younger veteran would probably need to take a few years to gain that experience before he opened up his tavern. So we'd like to see enough time available for that veteran to use that benefit.
We might want to give them a greater benefit, though, if they'll put in the lottery machines, right?
Yes.
We need the income for the state and schools and and our programs. I'm just kidding. Thank you, Kevin. Questions of Mr. O'Reilly? All right. Do you want to get with Mr. Stembridge and draft what you think would be an appropriate amendment to this bill?
I would be more than happy to.
We appreciate that. And if you wouldn't mind to let me know how you can contact you and so forth.
Thank you very much.
Any other questions?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Boquist.
Just in regards to that discussion, I'm wondering if we want to involve like someone from economic development or someone like that who would, for veterans who might help implement such a one-time grant type program to help out.
That's a very good idea. I just want to say, when we sponsored this bill to begin with, I seem to recall that this related to fees that were charged of military who were overseas, you know, fighting in a war, that there would be a waiver at that time. Many of them not aware or not in situations where they had somebody handling their business or their whatever their career occupation was. And I think that was the original message. So we can also look at it from that.
Right, Madam Chair, you're talking about like a deferment of some sort.
Right, a deferment possible. I do know it's important. Just recently, as a matter of fact, sorry I didn't bring it today. I did get a letter from an individual who's hadn't renewed their something license. I can't recall specifically. And it was a really costly venture because he'd spent many years building up this business and just over in the throes of fighting a war, you know, had not been able to, you know, get this done. So I think we probably want to consider making this a positive bill in that light. Any other discussion? Well, Representative Farr.
Madam Chair and Mr. O'Reilly, I'm wondering if maybe the original intent of this bill was to cover operators' licenses that need to be renewed, like beautician, barber, truck driver,
chiropractors,
those
carpenters,
and maybe
all the union requirements.
So maybe originally that was the intent, and it really was misstated as a business license, which would be a little bit different.
Yes.
Because that would be a one-time license that you purchase when you're starting up a new business, correct?
Right. I think some of them do need yearly renewals or bi-yearly renewals.
So would that be more acceptable to you as you now understand it?
Yes.
The original intent?
That would.
Thank you. Okay. Any other questions? I saw that. And thank you so much for being here, and I appreciate you working with Jim.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Okay, and I'll call on Mr. McDonald, please.
Good morning, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. Mr. Raya and I talked extensively before we came in today, and we feel it was a one-time basis for issuing a license. After that, the veteran is on his own.
Mr. McDonald, would you appreciate this bill more, for example, those who've just served 18 months over in Iraq, if they were unable and not in a position to have been focusing on their beautician license or barber license? Would you concur that this could be advantageous to them, that you know, that they can't lose their standing, for example, if you're required to?
Yes, ma'am, and I think under the Soldiers and Sailors Act they can't.
Soldiers and Sailors Act?
Brian, Representative Oakquist, would you know on that?
Madam Chair, I think on the Soldiers and Sailors Act, the negative action can't be taken, so what we're talking about is back to a deferment.
Back to deferment.
Where we're going to be a deferment where, obviously, if the business was in hibernation while they were gone, and I would recommend that, you know, in regards to Jim's powwow here, maybe be expanded to the cities and county reps because they best understand some of these licenses and fees, and I think they're probably amenable to helping those out that need to be helped out, you know, on this deferment issue and other things like that.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. McDonald. And Mr. Penhall? And can I bring up Michelle Dyster? Would you mind if just, even though she's with the cities and you're with the counties, you can like each other?
We can get along here for
a moment. Okay, all right. Solidarity. If not, I'm going to put Representative Boquist between.
As long as I brought money, right?
That's right.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Michelle Dyster with the League of Oregon Cities, and let me just say I really like the direction that this conversation is going. So we had some concerns about the bill as drafted, but apparently if you're looking at substantial amendments to it, maybe that can be alleviated.
So. Thank you so much.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bill Penhollow, representing the Association of Oregon Counties, and I would like to start off by commending the committee on the fine work you're doing for the veterans of Oregon and the United States. I had some concerns, I think, that were addressed in the discussion this morning, the concept of an overseas deferment. Would be something that I think we could agree on. The way the bill is written now, it's very broad, and I think it needs to be narrowed considerably because it would apply to most any kind of fee that would be related to a business.
Thank you. Your advice well taken.
Thank you.
Appreciate what both of you do for our cities and our counties, and I just want you to look out, if you heard my first comment today, of what's happening across our state and cities and our counties, and I'd appreciate any feedback you give me. It was my understanding from meeting with a safety that we don't want to give these creeps news coverage.
Right.
Seems to be one thing they want, but I'd certainly appreciate knowing what's happening across the state.
Very good.
Thank you. Thank you. Any good questions? Okay.
Sorry.
And I believe if there is no further discussion, I will close the public hearing. And our last bill today is?
Well, Madam Chair, you have two more bills.
Okay.
You have 2677 and 2445.
Okay. I want to just explain that we're honored today at the legislature in the fact that General Pritt will be joining us in the legislature today, and he will be going to Afghanistan, as you all know, to train that entire army. Makes us so proud. So we're going to try to get through these bills briefly, if we could here, about 2 minutes apiece. If we can always bring them back, but at least we'll know we need to work on an amendment, but we certainly want to pay proper courtesy to General Pritt. Okay? So I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2677. And?
Madam Chair, House Bill 2677 creates an Oregon National Guard Life Insurance Reimbursement Program and Fund. It appropriates a blank amount of general fund to the program. It declares an emergency. It takes effect July 1st, 2005. And the information that I provided for you is a copy of a news item on the New Mexico program and a little bit of information about the National Guard Life Insurance Reimbursement, the insurance that's available through the federal government.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'll ask Colonel Caldwell and Mr. McDonald to come forward, please. And I'll give each one of you 1 minute.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Colonel Mike Caldwell, Deputy Director, Oregon Military Department. I will take less than 1 minute.
All right.
Again, this bill is not, or this program is not within the governor's budget, so officially I would tell you that we are can't support the bill. However, having said that, as I've said many times here before you, if you were to move the bill along, then I would recommend that you consider, and I'm not not for or against it, but I would consider looking at retroactivity, because I think a good number of the soldiers you're trying to assist here will either be off active duty by the time this becomes law or will be coming off of active duty. Just a quick count, roughly 1,500 people are currently going to be off active duty by the end of this month that I think you were intending to focus on. There's another 1,000 or so that will be coming off by Christmas. So, and there'll be more going on, but I don't know if that was part of your thought process or not.
Yes.
And with that, I will defer to your questions.
Colonel Caldwell, could you get us a list of our guardsmen by how many we have, how many coming off, going on? I don't know how you do this, but so that we can really understand how many individuals we need to focus on. And it'll also help us in our costing on many of our programs, if you would, please.
Yes, ma'am.
And my quick question is, how is reenlistment?
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, up until, I think, probably about 60, 90 days ago, we were suffering, I would say, severe enlistment issues, particularly reenlistment issues. The last 90 days, we've seen a real nice bump. In fact, we're
increase?
One of the... Yes, ma'am.
Oh, right.
A lot of that's, I think, attributed to we sent a reenlistment counselor to Iraq 90 days prior to the 2162 coming back. I think that had a big impact on, and also coupled with that, the National Guard Bureau offered $15,000 bonuses. So we decided to send this reenlistment counselor, Sergeant First Class, over to make sure all of our people understood the benefits. And I think that played a big role in having them understand what they may or may not be eligible for. And we had, I think the number was around 150. Men out of the 2162 reenlist while in Iraq. So it was a significant bump from what we'd seen previously. And this is typically a slow time of year. It'll pick up in June, July, and August, and we're actually ahead of schedule. We were behind in the first quarter. Second quarter, we're actually ahead of schedule. So we're feeling rather good about it at this point, but who knows what tomorrow brings.
Thank you very much. Mr. McDonald?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Matt McDonald with the Oregon Veterans. We'd like to see the reserves included in this bill. We can't. I don't see how we could select out soldiers from the National Guard and not include the members of the organized reserves. And I'd like to point out that in the U.S. Senate, Senate Bill 77 would raise the death gratuity to 100,000. Group service life insurance coverage to 400,000, which the United States government would pay the first premiums on the first 150,000, and that the DOD and the Joint Chiefs of Staff have both approved of this bill.
And where is it? It's
in the U.S. Senate.
Is it filibuster, or is it beyond that?
Well, as far as I know, it's in the U.S. Senate, and I understand that the President has also endorsed it.
Okay. Question.
And Madam Chair, maybe Colonel Caldwell can come back to us at a later time, because in the supplemental appropriations, there's already funding for a very similar program to this one. I think it goes to $250,000.
Right.
If we get the status of the supplemental, that somebody knows. We would pass this to our administrator, but I think our administrator is under a large stack of paperwork, Madam Chair.
Well, he makes a lot of money, so he needs to work for his money. He makes four times as much as we do here.
Yeah, but Madam Chair, since Colonel Caldwell represents, 8,000 of the reservists of the 11,000 in this state, I think it falls upon his organization to take the lead.
I'd be more than happy to do that.
Thank you very much.
Just to shut your mouth, right, Mike?
Thank you.
And we watch it.
Any questions? Any further discussion? I think, the $250,000 life insurance policy that we've recommended, you know, with a minimal premium per month of less than $20 is a program that we must pursue. Okay. Close the hearing on 2677 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2425.
Madam Chair, House Bill 2425 allows disabled veterans and active military personnel free use of state parks and campsites. It limits the free use of overnight facilities to 5 consecutive days. In your materials that I prepared for this, I have a list of the fees that the department is charging for its various services around the state attached, as well as some sample fees.
Is there any public testimony on 2425? Would all of y'all come up? Uh-oh. 1 minute apiece. Please. Well, these individuals are coming forward. I'd like for our administrator to let you know the travel schedule of this committee, if you would, please.
Yes, we are going to be leaving Friday for Camp Rylea. We have a...
And where is that?
Camp Rylea is just south of Warrenton. It's out on the coast in Clatsop County.
Is that by Astoria?
It's near Astoria. I think that Lewis and Clark, or one of the other of them, passed by there on his way down to Tillamook Head, and they went to see the whale.
Oh, well, that's impressive.
I'm not sure when the meeting is. You can look on the schedule to find out exactly when the public meeting is, Friday afternoon. And then Saturday afternoon we'll be in Portland at the 33rd Street Armory. It's also known as the Cleaver Memorial Armory. And that meeting is in the afternoon. That's the travel for.
So this is this week's travel.
That's
Friday
week.
And
Friday and Saturday.
And Saturday. What about next week's travel?
On the 15th, the committee will be going to Roseburg. Has an afternoon public meeting in Roseburg, and a morning meeting on Saturday in Ashland, and then an afternoon meeting in Klamath Falls. Those are both on the 16th. Which is Saturday. Those times are also listed in the schedule. They're official public meetings of the committee.
So we're hoping that all of our military who reside in any of those areas and all of our veterans and families will join us. It's very important. We want to be sure that we have reviewed every need concern of our military and our veterans and their families. We don't want this session to end until we're convinced that we've gone through many many issues of concern to them, in fact all of them. So I look forward to those meetings, and I'm hoping that the county service veteran officers are alert to this, and all of our veteran associations have received notice so that they will join us. It means a lot. Gentlemen, I'm going to have to, Mr. McDonald, would you allow Representative Wisnut to come forward first? This is his bill, and he's joined us, and then this is the custom. Y'all can stay here. And Jean, please speak to us.
Thank you, Madam Chair, honorable members of this committee. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify today. This bill was introduced at the request of one of my constituents, a retired Army Lieutenant Colonel. And I'm here to testify in favor of House Bill 2425.
Sean, why don't you give that to the lady over here and she'll pass it.
This bill comes, as I said, at the request of retired U.S. Army Lieutenant Colonel Dick DeBison, a veterans advocate from Central Oregon. House Bill 2425 directs the State Parks and Recreation Commission to allow disabled veterans and active duty military personnel to use state parks, campsites, and day use areas free of charge. It also says the persons maintaining a foster home and visiting with a foster child residing in their care receives the same benefits. This bill does not give veterans and military members free reign of state parks. It limits the free use of the parks to a maximum of 5 consecutive days. The free use of these parks would be a much appreciated gesture for the service our men and women have provided. These men and women have and currently are serving us proudly. To allow them the opportunity to enjoy Oregon's beautiful state parks is the least we can do to honor our veterans. Thank you, Madam Chair, for allowing me to testify again. It's provided to me that less than 10% of Oregon's 370,000 veterans would qualify under this proposal, as there are about 35,000 disabled veterans living in Oregon. Washington State also does provide this service to their veterans.
All right. Makes me proud of our neighboring state.
That completes my testimony, Madam Chair. I'll be glad to try to answer questions.
Thank you, and good Representative Wisnitz. I want to personally thank you for your military career and service, and we're most appreciative.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, any questions? Yes, Representative Farr.
Representative Wisnitz, I am assuming that this was not your original intent, but in the handout that we were given, which you don't have, because of the way the bill is worded, it also includes a deluxe cabin on Walla Walla Lake for $80 per night and trailer hookups at $29 or yurts at Tumalo for $64. So I'm just wondering, your original intent was probably the cost of a campsite and a day use fee. Is that correct?
That's correct, Honorable Representative Barr. I did not see that. I think I would probably support a discount, or but I'm not sure it would be free, but a discount with those facilities.
Follow up, Madam Chair.
Yes.
So, Representative Wisnitz, would you be willing to add an amendment that clears up the confusion?
It would be my honor, Honorable Representative Barr.
Thank you. Any other questions of the good rep? Representative, thank you. Mr. O'Reilly.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kevin O'Reilly.
Representative Wisnitz, will you stay just a moment to hear this? It'll be interesting to you, please.
My name is Kevin O'Reilly, here representing the Oregon Paralyzed Veterans of America. And we oppose this bill as it's written. We do support, I'll make this quick, we support active duty military personnel getting free use of parks. Not cabins and yurts, of course, but just the hookups at an RV site and a day use area. We did a little research, not as much as I'm sure as Mr. Stembridge did, but we noticed that it's only about 16% of our day use areas charge a fee. The fee is $3. You can get a year-long pass for $25. It's hard to imagine this as a financial burden on anyone. These fees are used to help keep our parks usable by all citizens of Oregon and tourists. And we like tourists. They bring money into Oregon, and that's a good thing.
Yes.
As long as they're willing to go home when they're done.
Are you related to the former governor, Tom McCall?
No, but I like the man. That's not the point anyway. There's a companion. There's another bill out there. It's House Bill 3427. This bill would give the same free access to day use areas for citizens who are over 60 and for disabled citizens. And we think maybe these two bills could be brought together. We would support a reduced fee for disabled veterans, disabled citizens, and elderly, but we don't think free use is really necessary or appropriate in this instance.
Thank you very much for your testimony, and Mr. Wood, please.
Thank you very much. For the record, my name is Tim Wood. I'm the director of the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department, and when you are meeting at Camp Rylea, I would encourage you to visit Gecola State Park and see where Captain Clark took his crew and visited the whale, one of the parks in our system that's directly associated with the Lewis and Clark travels in the state.
Mr. Wood, thank you for that invitation. Do we have to pay?
Representative Nelson, Gecola State Park is a day-use fee park. That's correct. If you're there on official business, as I'm certain you would be, we could certainly see to it that the committee was Let me see how I say this.
I think you better just be quiet.
But also,
Madam Chair, for the record, my name.
I want to thank you very much for our your attention and your department for our great parks. So you've done a wonderful job, and I'm most appreciative. I've been to many of them, and makes me proud.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the business at hand, regarding House Bill 2425, which would provide free use of state parks and camping to disabled veterans and members of the active military on leave status, I just really have two comments, and they somewhat echo Representative Wisnant's comments as well. First of all, last year, and the language that is being modified in this draft bill is language, some of it is language which was approved by in statute in last session. And we believe that the statute currently gives our department, our commission, the authority to make those waivers or to waive those fees for veterans. And as the bill or as the statute is currently written, we do that for Memorial Day, Independence Day, and Veterans Day. And our commission is very willing to consider making those waivers a part of our rules in lieu of legislation. Secondly, I would talk to the point that the representative made with regard to campsites, and Representative Farr as well. The language talks about overnight facilities, and in our rules we refer to overnight facilities as lodges, yurts, cabins, and those sorts of things. And I do believe that the intent of this was to limit the free use to individual campsites. And so I would recommend that amendment be considered if this bill goes forward, as well as replacing the term disabled veterans with veterans with service-connected disabilities. That some will in some ways reduce the economic or the impact on revenue to the department. Will properly recognize those who have become disabled as a result of their service, and also because of the fact that they have veterans who have service-connected disabilities carry an ID card which designates them as such would make the program much easier to administer. I'd be happy to work with you on any amendments to this bill. And as I mentioned, if the bill does not go forward, our commission is prepared to go forward with a waiver program as well. Thank you
so much for being here. Questions? Okay. I want to thank you all very much. And Mr. McDonald.
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Matt McDonald, representing Oregon Veterans. This bill really began 2 years ago when Representative Butler held Bill 2327 at the request of Charles Chapin from Ontario to let disabled veterans into state parks. The state parks at the same time had a Bill 2208 that would let disabled veterans into state parks for 4 days free. At that time, Michael Carrier was the head of the Oregon State Parks, and John Mangus, the head of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. Mr. Carrier asked Mr. Mangus to pull his bill, and they would, by administrative rule, when the other bill passed, allow Oregon veterans into Oregon State Parks. The administrative rule was never enacted, and for 2 years, we've been charged to go into state parks. The 4th of July last year, which was one of the free days, I was charged to go into Shampooey State Park.
That's in almost my district. And I wish I had known that.
We had a meeting shortly after the last session at the state park's old location on Commercial Street, and again agreed by administrative rule to get into state parks. Nothing happened, so this last October I went to Oregon State Parks and met with a gentleman and asked why it didn't happen. And out of that meeting came a second meeting on 21 December in which the Oregon State Parks and the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs and the Oregon Veterans came to a conclusion that a bill such as this bill should be passed. We on line 21, We would like to include in there service-connected disabled veteran. On line 25, where it says overnight facilities for to no more than five consecutive days, we'd like to add or 10 days in any calendar month, which means that they wouldn't go from park to park to park to live at all times, and I think it would be only fair to the Oregon State Parks if that was enabled. But I would like to see the bill go forward by administrative rule. They did not do it. For 2 years, the Oregon disabled veterans have not been able to get into state parks. I think that this needs to go forward, be part of the legislature, and pass there, because you can change the administrative rule at any time. And I'd like to see it in writing go forward. And I'd like to see something in there added. Would there be discount for the overnights if they went to a year or one of those facilities that the Oregon State Parks has? Okay.
Thank you, Mr. McDonald, and I appreciate all of you. And we're going to go meet up with General Pritt at this time. I'm going to adjourn this committee. Thank you very much. Would y'all work with...